Hey guys, we've got a really cool class coming up. We start with trying to link Tai Chi and as a bridge to Buddhism, and we use that as a way to check what your intention is with learning.
Yeah, because if you don't have something that you can actually observe, how are you going to observe your own consciousness to see if you're developing any wisdom?
Yeah, and something as abstract as Buddhism and the truth of life is like pretty hard to check if you're doing it. Like, how do you know if you're living properly? But simple Tai Chi moves, well, they sound simple, but when you actually watch what you're doing, are you matching that philosophy? And can you actually make your body language be something other than you?
And this is a good way to check, you know, as you're starting to, you know, if you're listening to more classes and you're learning more wisdom, am I learning it just so I can remember some cool ideas and show off to my friends? Or am I actually improving, winning an argument? Or am I actually improving my heart and my life?
Yeah.
So we're going to kick off with that, and then...
Well, then we ventured down a few cool paths because there was some like conflict on the earth lately, the last couple of days. So we used this as an opportunity to talk about what is karma, and the earth is a collection of all the different karma of the consciousness that live on it. We went down some pretty cool topics.
And we're going to use that to connect to a high-level consciousness called Hail Bodhisattva, to practice a ceremony or a bowing that you could practice at home as a way to change bad feelings you have towards that to help those life.
It's a really good one to have as an ability to bow, so you can, if your loved ones pass away and you want to feel like you're doing something useful, you can connect them to that system. It's really joyful. But yeah, it was a big class. We went a little bit over, so I hope you guys enjoy it. Have fun.
Welcome. It was interesting. We had a good class with Sifu on the weekend. It's good. Sometimes we have really sharp class. Not like sharp attacking, more like sharp to the point that makes you kind of reassess your own heart instantly. So I thought we might kind of loop in some of that, see if we can get some of that flavour. What were we doing when everyone came in? When everyone came in, what were Sean and I doing?
Training.
We were training Tai Chi. Right. Why?
Why? I'm guessing there are a lot of reasons why. But one could be because you guys are really passionate about it.
That's true. We are. We've been recording. We found apps to slow motion the Kung Fu down. Because Sifu's in Taiwan, so we don't get kind of regular training each week. So we've taken upon to train ourselves.
Because you don't want your level to drop.
Ooh, very good. We're on the level up. And how does that relate to Buddhism class?
Because that's the same thing. You need to practice and learn to keep your level rising instead of going into blindness. So you need to keep learning and developing and practicing.
It's true. One of the things Sifu was talking about is that Buddhism is a bit of can become a mental game, because we learn new ideas and then we remember them. We're like, I know the six Bodhisattva characters.
I hold nothing already.
I hold nothing. That's easy.
I don't need to learn this. I can already see that life's illusion.
I remember that.
Damn, I got a parking ticket. No!
Yeah. Don't hold it, Sean. You pay it.
I'm not. It's just, I don't have any money because I stopped holding it a long time ago.
So he said one of the dangers you have is you come to class and you learn a whole lot of philosophy, but we don't actually use it. We just remember it. And then we go around, we might go and hang out with family, and we're like, you know what you should do? You should hold nothing. You should be more generous. And how much do they appreciate that? Do you think?
I don't think they would.
No. They're like, stop annoying me with the philosophy I haven't asked them.
Stop saying Buddhism.
Yeah. If you say suffering one more time, yeah. I'm going to knock you over the head and you'll have to deal with that suffering.
So we get drawn into this trap, but luckily we have martial art. And so one of the reasons that Sean and I train is, and what Sifu was talking about the weekend, is to see your level go up in Buddhism is quite difficult to observe yourself. But to see your level in Tai Chi is a little bit easier. So if you have a discipline, if you have a philosophy that you can practice, that's a chance for you to observe yourself. Do you really value developing that discipline? And if you've got no time to learn Tai Chi is much easier to learn than Buddhism. So he's like, you don't even really sincere to learn Tai Chi, learning Buddhism is a joke. And we're like, so.
And the ability to match a move, like one move, simple move, twist your body, power from foot, center straight, that's simple. It sounds simple, right? So to be able to do that, great. To be able to change your heart to say,
stop taking things personally. It's like, that's a big jump from like, in this moment I turned my foot and now I'm trying to not take anything in my life personally ever. Big jump, hard to measure. But Sivu said the thing he likes about martial art is all these people that write these Buddhism books and say they understand Buddhism, and he goes, all right, cool, just do one Tai Chi move. It's like, you can speak a lot, great, but just shut up and do something that is philosophy. Show me you can match that philosophy. The easier one, show me. It's like the Nike slogan is just do it. He's like, that's what it's good for. Just do it. Stop talking. Just do it. It kind of weeds out who talks a lot and who does a lot. So being able to do something and be a philosophy is very different than being able to remember and talk about it. I can remember and talk about Tai Chi all day, but when I go to do it, my bum's out, my neck's not straight. Can I do Tai Chi? No. Can I talk about Tai Chi? All day. No problem. I remember all the books, but I can't do one move. Would you say I really had that ability? But same with Buddhism. I can remember all the ideas, but when suffering appears in my life, can I observe how I created it, where it came from, how I acted blindly, and then learn how to dig out the problem and clean it out? Different ability, right? Different ability.
Just yeah. I felt really, really humbled by that on the weekend. Yes.
So that makes sense, but isn't that like a further on step from, isn't the first step to remember by mind?
Mm-hmm.
So the first step might be to remember all that stuff, but you're not ready to put it in to practice yet. So even if you are kind of in the, like, you're at the level where you're reading or like learning, but you can't do yet, that's okay, right?
I'm confused. I'm hoping you want to answer.
I'm not sure if I understand. Are you saying just in Buddhism or Tai Chi? Because that's the stages of learning. So that same thing goes towards Tai Chi as well. You remember that's the first part, is you remember the poses, and then you start, and then in the end it becomes nature being.
So
it's not like remember Buddhism philosophy and then practice Tai Chi. Is that what you mean?
Oh no, what I was thinking more was like, so with Buddhism philosophy, first you remember it. By mind.
What's the order? So let's get the order.
Okay. Remember by mind. Understand by mind. Remember by heart. Understand by heart and practice naturally, joyfully. I don't know if the words are right. But...
No, that's cool. Yeah, become till it becomes your natural being.
Yeah.
Okay, so remember by mind, understand by mind.
Mm-hmm.
So if I say to you, all the suffering in our lives is created by ourselves,
mm-hmm.
you can understand that. It's not complicated, right?
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
So you've remembered it by mind. And you already understand it by mind.
Mm-hmm.
To understand it by heart is every time you have suffering to go, it's my fault somehow. How is it my fault?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than always, like I used to be like, nah, it's their fault. They brought the suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Like my instinct was to blame the outside world.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I learned Buddhism that I was like, actually,
mm-hmm.
all my suffering is my creation.
Mm-hmm.
They can do whatever they want. And if I feel suffering for it, that means that's my fault.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, to learn something, it's not that you wait until you remember everything by mind and then you try to understand it by mind.
Because
with Buddhism, you're never going to get to the end of that map. It's so...
Yeah.
And you need to understand and be able to apply so much. Hey, Big.
Hey, guys. Yeah, sure.
You need to be able to understand so much to be able to apply it to your life.
Yeah.
And only when you start applying it will the next layer make sense.
Yeah.
So you don't wait until you understand it all,
remember
it all, understand it all, then start practicing it.
Yeah.
That's too long.
Okay. So the problem is that some people will be doing that system, like will just be remembering, but they don't start to implement it as they're in the remembering stage.
You said some people, but what about for yourself?
Oh, okay. So personally, definitely in remember by mind, I still can't do that a lot of the time.
It's for Tai Chi?
For Buddhism.
For Buddhism?
For Tai Chi is... I know, that's it. I'm trying to...
This is the thing. This is what brought everyone in the class. Is that everyone's like, but I know a lot of philosophy. You're like, yeah, but that doesn't really count.
I understand I'm in stage one, right?
Yeah.
But I'm trying to understand how stage one would relate to Tai Chi. Like, if you put that, mapped that five stages of learning onto Tai Chi, what would be the equivalent?
Stage one.
Mm.
It's this Tai Chi and Buddhism, it's a bridge to the same goal.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't separate them. You'd say, Tai Chi, the goal is to be in harmony.
First harmony in your own body, so all your joints are open and loose, and you're in harmony with the universe energy, so your center's nice and straight. Because this posture is more suffering, right? This posture is more stress and more spine, so we train our body to be like that. So that's where Qigong and Tai Chi starts. So Tai Chi and Buddhism both say your body, your physical temple, your four element body, you have to keep it in harmony, keep it working, right? So they're both, the first step in both, whether you're learning Tai Chi or Buddhism is the same.
So to remember by mind.
Yeah, to remember by mind, and you would automatically, if you truly understood that by mind, wouldn't you practice it?
Yeah.
So you just had needles, right?
Yeah.
Don't you feel better?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not that you have to get to the end to then start practicing. You actually just take logic as you get it. Oh, okay, keep my body supple and loose, stretch, look after it. I'll feel better straight away. So you're already in the practicing stage. I wouldn't say you're at level one. You were in level one a long time ago when you first met Red Bull. Okay. And you first came to the first class. That was level one.
Okay.
You're one of our biggest like answerers of questions now. You can't be level one.
Like sometimes things are really clear to me mentally, but I can't put that into practice.
I'd say the intention for why you're doing it changes. So you're just joyful and excited because you want to share the answer.
Yeah.
But if you were like, I have this, and you're a bit of a jerk about it, that's more mental game.
Yeah, okay. And we get that sometimes. Some people come in for a first class, and they're like, I read about
it. I actually went to a seminar I studied at university. Buddhism was actually,
I actually met the Dalai Lama once in an elevator, and he told me I was enlightened.
Yeah. He said, good point to you.
Good point to you.
I see what you're saying.
So intention into that same thing changes it completely.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can call yourself level one.
And you raise a good point, because that kind of questioning is why Sifu brought it. Because he said, oh, everyone loves philosophy and you come to class, how's the Tai Chi? How come people don't call me for training? How come everyone has an excuse for training? Do you do your own training? What are your excuses? Are you looking to blame someone? Well, whose fault is it if you can't do Tai Chi? My fault?
It's totally society's fault. I mean, I've got to work so hard to pay the bills, and I just don't have time.
My parents never walked with Tai Chi awareness. I never learned it.
It's definitely their fault.
Yeah,
his parents never taught him, so he didn't teach me. It's their fault.
Yeah, there wasn't enough like nunchucks or swords when I was growing up.
They didn't teach it in school.
I actually think my mum specifically tried to stop me from getting a sword or nunchucks.
I'd be interested to hear everyone's observation. I appreciate you saying that, because I think many of the facial expressions that I caught in the class were that kind of guessing, like, oh, when he said, like, trying to learn Buddhism as a joke, if you don't have that equal passion to learn Tai Chi. And everyone was like, ooh. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I felt mine straight away. I was like, oh, okay, yep. And then so I felt that I could observe others. So I'd be interested to hear other people's observations of themselves.
So what are we asking them? What's the question for the people at home on the podcast?
For people at home, if you're listening or you listen to many, and particularly for anyone that's come to a class, they enjoy the philosophy, otherwise you wouldn't be here. And Tai Chi is a bridge to learning that philosophy. So you can observe your intention for Buddhism next to your intention to observe your body. How does your intention match between learning Tai Chi and learning Buddhism?
When I first started, I only wanted to learn Tai Chi. I didn't actually really get Buddhism. I didn't understand it. I felt kind of silly in the class, so I didn't really want to learn it. And then Sifu gave me a good swift kick in the bum and said, I'm not going to teach you that unless you're learning that. So swallow it, get in there. And then I started to understand it, and now I enjoy it, and I see the effect it has. And every day is another day. Like, some days you're like, oh, but it's like I've had a big week and I just like to stay home. And if you beat that voice, you usually come in and I enjoy it. And if I let that voice win and I don't come, I usually sit at home going, yeah, what I did wasn't that meaningful. I should have gone to class.
It's like a guilty voice that pops up later and goes like...
Yeah, so when Sifu brought that up in class, I also went, oh. Because funny enough, I was just training Tai Chi, my sort of form before class, and realizing tired, like I haven't trained in a while, and it took like almost half an hour just to get the thinking out of it, like, and not going through all the poses, but the thinking was there, so I wasn't actually practicing the actual philosophy, like, of doing Tai Chi. It was just all the moves. So when Sifu brought that up in class, it was a little bit of a kick in the ass as well to, like, observe if, like, I want my discipline to grow in terms of practicing wisdom as well, but also how do I really put that into practice, and I've been sort of neglecting the physical, like, Tai Chi part of it. I've been reading philosophy, I've been bowing every day, but, like, I knew there was something not connecting, and then when that happened, it was just like, ah. So that gave me the drive to sort of focus more on actually practicing and training Tai Chi.
And how much have you practiced this week since that class?
Twice.
Well done. Why, when you're thinking, do you say it's not doing matching Tai Chi philosophy?
Well, so if you always say if you're in your head about either how it looks, whether it's right or whatnot, you're not bringing attention to it's your foot. And if your awareness is away from your foot, then your power doesn't come from your foot, and that you're basically not moving in center or generating power from foot, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also a moving meditation, which is not meant to be thinking about what's the next move.
Basically, to do Tai Chi perfectly, you have to be completely aware of the present. Gravity, your foot, your charge center, the procedure of how that energy is moving up. So if I'm in my head thinking, everybody's watching me, everybody's watching me, everybody's watching me, is all my awareness in creating that perfect move, or is it lost in thinking and worrying about something, right? If I'm wasting my awareness on thinking...
Hey, Romani, that's why it's not mental game. Because your actions are compassion.
Yeah, you want to help out, you're supportive. Someone whose mental game would sit there and go, yes, someone else who's beneath me, go and grab a pillow.
I'm sure wise, I don't have to do anything.
Yeah, yeah. So the character doesn't suit mental game.
Still.
Yeah. Yeah, good answer. Good answer.
Okay, so much the same as everyone who was there, I felt a bit rattled by the, like, if you don't value Tai Chi, then you don't value Buddhism. But I think a lot of that was because I value Tai Chi to train, and I trained it on my own a lot, but I hadn't booked in with him individually, and I was like, oh, but it's so hard, and blah, blah, blah. Which it is, so hard and blah, blah, blah. So where Sean wanted to learn martial arts more straight away and not Buddhism when he first started learning, I was the opposite. I was so intrigued by, like, trying to figure out life, but I didn't have a passion for the learning of Tai Chi and Qigong. It wasn't my nature, you know. I was hard and blunt, you know, and Tai Chi is soft and delicate, you know. I figured just enough grrr would get me through anything in life. It had got me pretty far through 21 years at that point. And it's actually very hard to change that underlying feeling. If you ever see when I'm stressed or feel like, even in a Tai Chi form, I'm not doing it well, I'll just add power and make it as impacting as I can, you know, so people are like, wow, that guy's so powerful, it must be good. So in relation to my learning of Tai Chi, it is a trained discipline rather than a natural passion. If we sit down, like, you know, to show up to Friday class or Sunday class or to read our philosophy every day or to bow is like something that's been on one level or another installed in me for a long time. But to commit to Tai Chi, no matter what, in a week, it takes a back seat. The thing that brought my awareness to it a bit more deeply and helped me see a bridge the other day was I was chatting to Sean Free about it, and he said when you train Tai Chi, you have to you cannot hold your own ego, your own feeling. You have to match the philosophy. There can't be two different liquids in your cup. It's one or it's the other. You have to empty one to fill it with the other, right? And that matches the idea of hold nothing that's so strong in Buddhism. So for the first time in a while, I felt my heart open to train it and develop it again. Not just because I kind of know I have to, like I have this checklist in my head, or I had it self-talk and said, yeah, you know you should do Tai Chi, I don't like it, but you know you should, okay, I'll go along. You know, that's like a real easy one to go for. And I think underneath that whole conversation, there is that awareness that I once remember learning that point. But that point kind of drove it home to me a bit. you know, I'm pretty sure as long as I keep a baseline discipline of Qigong and stretching and tension release in the family, my body will last me well enough, you know. And I'm pretty sure I'll keep bowing and I'll keep reading philosophy and I'll keep coming to the classes I can come to as best I can, you know. And that's been pretty good so far. But to actually feel from heart, this is valued because I get to practice what I value from Buddhism when I do Tai Chi, that's a strengthening cause for me.
Yeah, new passion.
Yeah, we felt that on Saturday. Me and Tim were saying you were more like excited for the Tai Chi component of the day. Mm. It was good. It was really nice to have you back in the passionate Tai Chi side.
In the zone, yeah.
Well, there's a form we do, which is I've just started learning, called the Tai Chi 2 form, and there's lots of explosions in it, and it's quite exhausting. And Sean finished it, and by regular standards, a very good form. But I really like that he did it, and he's like, I can do better. And, you know, and so he's like, I'm going to do that again. And he got up and did the form, and then got to moves he wasn't happy with, and then asked, like, is this right? This, and until he was happy with all the disciplines. And it's like that kind of self-confidence, self-discipline is like, wow, you know? I was really inspired to train.
Yeah, it's also letting go of that ego that wants to pretend I can do everything. Like, we naturally have that. Like, when people are watching, you're like, I've got to make it look good. Yeah. And if you're, like, doing it, you're like, does it look right? Rush the harsh truth, like, no, stick your bum back under it. Yeah. Oh, that's okay. So it's actually being more truthful, you know, when you're in that moment. You don't want to pretend. Like, Daniel filmed and watched his film today.
Oh, yes.
How was that, buddy?
Oh, yes. a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, what did you see?
Hip out. What chin was it under? A few of my steps were more so like not toe under, it's more like pointing the toe up.
So before you filmed it though, did you think you had that many mistakes, or did you think it looked pretty?
I didn't think I had
that. That camera does not lie.
Before, but then it's like, yep, lay on the wall, there's your 3 minutes stretch.
I think I've been definitely connected to Tai Chi Chi Gong first, for philosophy. I hated exercise. Like, really hated it.
Don't hold back. Tell us how you did.
And this was the first form of, like, physical activity that I didn't detest. So, yeah, that was really... And I felt really good after I did it. And I don't know if it was, like, the philosophy or the endorphins, or, like, if this is just what exercise is like. Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was great. And it really stuck. And it helped because... The Tai Chi really stuck because I could see improvements. Like, I had photos of when I first started and 3 months later, and I could physically see the difference, and I felt like my body was in less pain and I could feel the difference. So that tangible improvement made me, I mean, it really fueled my passion for it. The philosophy aspect started when you and Red Bull would have that Wednesday BBC.
On the BBC.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I think that's a common one with the passion. I know I remember saying to Steve, I was like, I just don't feel like training. And he's like, oh, don't train. And I was like, oh, but isn't that bad? He's like, well, sometimes you don't feel like training. He's like, you have a lot of passion, so you feel like if you have no passion, like, your life is over. Like, that's very dramatic. Brings you a lot of struggle. But, like, most people have almost no passion for anything, and they think that's normal. So it's like, sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not. But, you know, so...
It really dips.
Yeah, it dips. And I find sometimes when I'm a bit self-congratulatory, like, I trained every day last week, automatically next week I'll do no training. Yeah. It's crazy. The moment I'm this one, it's this one, gone. So
I was looking into a mirror.
Did you just read my journal?
Yeah.
Have you been reading my diary? Nice. Okay.
I really enjoyed philosophy class, but I'm not a great fan of Tai Chi.
Why? Why is that? I appreciate your honesty.
Honestly.
But why is that?
I just do it because for me to understand the six Bodhisattva characters mentally and to practice, I completely understand that the way for me to understand, like, back practice is by doing Tai Chi. Mm. Yeah. But I don't like it.
I I've had moments like that, but yeah, that's a tough one.
I really enjoy philosophy class. Like,
why do you enjoy
so much
class?
Joy into my life. I just, like, I feel my heart that opens up, like, a lot. And as soon as I know that I need to do Tai Chi, it's just like, oh, really? But
couldn't we just do some more philosophy?
More philosophy.
Is that related
for yoga, or I don't know. I do it just because I know that I need to do it, and I don't know how to change it into a different thing.
You get in trouble if you don't do it.
this is exactly what I was saying.
Yeah,
I have the same eye. Right. Yeah, yeah.
But then with Buddhism, compared to teachers, we are not that good at Buddhism. How can you get over that hurdle?
Because everyone's not that good.
Is that right?
It just, it brings so much joy. It's like makes so much sense, and it brings so much joy into my heart that it's open to, like, to learn and to know when I'm really curious. Yeah.
With Tai Chi, originally I really liked it. I think because I could see progression, and I had tried like meditation in the past, and it was just like I couldn't do it at all. But with Tai Chi, with like movie meditation, it actually like felt like I had glimpses of it, and which was really cool. And I also really actually physically like doing it. Like, I'm the opposite of Merin. I've always liked sports and like physical activity. But then I stopped training it, and I kind of, my level dropped. And so now I've got a bit of an ego problem where I don't like doing it, and I'm avoiding training it because I'm like not good.
Is that why you didn't reply last week?
I was just really busy.
You're moving house.
But there you go. There's another excuse. I could have probably found
okay.
time.
I was like, moving house is stressful.
Yeah.
That's okay.
But, yeah, because I used to train it a lot, and then I sort of stopped, and, like, things came up. So that one is, like, I feel like I'm moving into that camp, so I want to...
It's contagious. Quarantine.
No, I do really like it. I just, kind of like Belen, like, I like it when I'm good at it. Like, I think a lot of people are like that. But Buddhism, I haven't had that sort of... I don't have an ego when it comes to Buddhism as much as I do when it comes to Qigong. It's easier to drop your ego when you're thinking about Buddhism because, like, I'm never thinking about... Like, it's easier to drop your I and mine. So I guess I don't get, like, competitive or comparing heart as much, being like, oh my God, Merit understands this so much better than me, like, what? So...
She's a little bright,
what? Yeah. So, yeah, connecting with Buddhism seems a lot... It's much easier. It's not as, like, a... Yeah, up and down. Yeah.
When I started learning Buddhism, we'll talk about consciousness. And consciousness has no form. That means there's nothing about consciousness that you can observe. So anything you can observe ain't consciousness. And that makes it really difficult because Buddhism is about learning to observe your consciousness. So Tai Chi is a way to do that. I'll give you an example. I don't like being told what to do, and I have opinions. And I'm training my monkey form, and Sean's like, one of those moves, I don't think you twist your foot. And my first instinct is like, this is my fault. I know this fault. That's my first thing. I can't stop that. That's just the first thing that pops up. And that pops up, and I'm like, hang on a second. I asked him for his opinion. I asked him, you know what I mean? So I'm like, what thinking? And he's like, oh, I don't think it moves. I'm like, which move? This one? So he's like, yeah, but now you're doing it wrong. Now your chin's rolling. I'm just like, I was trying to fix the board. I'm just like, so it gives me a way, because that's my subconscious. It's automatic. And I can't think my way to stop that, but it just gives me a chance to observe it, to change slowly. And so I don't know anything more effective to do that. I think I've gotten better over time.
Oh man, you, like, to give you an example, when I said that, the facial expression change was like, ooh. And then it came back to, oh, okay, which move? And I was like, oh, we're okay. But before, that feeling would have knocked you off your harmony for a good half hour, maybe an hour.
And that,
Tim's more of like a furrowed brow and a like, who asked you? That face, like. But yeah, no, you clean it out really quick now.
So, and that's something that I didn't like about myself, particularly because with our feedback, I mean, I'm not a master of Kung Fu. So unless I... What did Sibu say to me? He said, if you...
you want to learn, but you don't like to be taught.
Yeah. Love to learn, hate to be taught. Because he was like, what's your... Everyone has a learning character. I was like, what's mine? Like, love to learn, hate to be taught. I was like, oh my gosh. That's totally right. And he's like, that is an annoying contradiction. But it's all right, because we all learn patience. So, yeah. Because we learn the philosophy to help the brain consciousness, but it's our subconscious that is always creating our karma, every second automatically, whether we think of stuff or not. He didn't say Sifu say to us once, we're like, how do I know when I'm creating spiritual karma? It's like, well, only when you're observing philosophy.
Yeah.
Every other time you're creating bad karma.
Yeah.
I'm like, ooh.
I'm gonna check the scoreboard.
Yeah.
Can I get a recount?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So no, I think that's really, really useful.
Yeah.
I just remembered something that actually kicks up me to realize that Tai Chi was important to learn Buddhism, because I think this was two years ago. I can't remember, but I remember my ego getting a little bit big from like coming to classes and learning and thinking that I've got it sorted. Like I'm getting the hang of this and my wisdom's rising, da da da. And there was one class, I can't remember who it was, but that student was doing like a mental game thing, or like a mental ego, and Sifu was kicking his ass. And Sifu said, your awareness for your Tai Chi is not even that high. How can you say you fully understand like Buddhism philosophy? So that made me go, ooh. My Tai Chi away.
Yeah. Like, you don't even practice it, observe yourself doing Tai Chi. How yes. much observing are you observing life?
Yeah.
You can't
yeah.
even observe this life.
Yeah.
Yeah, your own body, like your own movements, power from foot, you can't even do that, and you see you understand like
something you can film, rewatch and check, are you doing it? That's one thing. But
yeah.
a situation you're involved in, you can't film it and observe it and go, oh, look, see, I was being generous. See how generous I was? Look, and he was being greedy, and I stopped him because he was being greedy.
Yeah, and I was patient.
I was patient. Look how patient I am in that video. Like, it's impossible to observe life like that if you haven't practiced observing movement. That's the irony of it. And we, like, yeah, we don't actually... So, like Tim was saying, like, to do a... Like what Sean was saying, you can't... I can't be there and have my mental ego character and think I'm doing Qigong. It won't work. I've actually got to completely be free from that character that's always in a hurry, wants to get everything he wants now. That can't appear in Tai Chi, or Tai Chi will look super rushed. Did I do it? Tim, how was my Tai Chi? Do it again. No, I'm done. I've got to go. Boom.
Already accomplished it.
Tick. I'm going to write that on my Instagram profile. Can't do Tai Chi. Thank you all for sharing. That was lovely. Like Tim just said, only when you're observing wisdom are you creating spiritual karma. The rest of our life, we don't create any spiritual karma. It's only in those, like this class, spiritual karma, or when you bow, spiritual karma, when you choose to read philosophy, dedicate time to properly reading it, not just like in between phone calls, like try and read it and you're not concentrating, like actually have the intention to try to understand what that philosophy is saying. We don't know why we were born in this body, on the earth, at the time we were born. That's what's called karma, and it's all from past life karma. And this earth is what's called combination life form, or like, what's the word?
Mess world.
There's another one. That's the time. Earth, so they're saying that like other universes have a protective boundary to stop certain consciousness getting in. Amitabha Buddha has a Pure Land.
Oh, that's me, sorry.
Amitabha Buddha has a Pure Land, and the way the universe is set up is if you don't match a certain level of discipline or wisdom, you can't connect to that space. Earth doesn't have that. Earth is just all the combination life form creating this space. So we pollute the earth, or we grow a forest, you know, we all the consciousness that live on earth help create the condition it's in. Does that make sense? And so all the life that are here are not spiritual. Some are, some aren't. Some are very not spiritual, some are a little bit spiritual. And it's because that collection is all blind, it's all constantly influencing each other. So that's why you get a lot of kind of conflict, because there's people that don't understand themselves, they don't observe their consciousness and don't know that they're greedy, or they do know that they're greedy and they get into a position of power and then they become a dictator and control the whole country. Or they're narrow-minded and they see one perspective and then go really strong in that direction and have a lot of power with that narrow-minded perspective. You know, like, it's not perfect wisdom in a position of making change. Amitabha Buddha's Pure Land is through perfect wisdom, understanding how illusion being works and how to influence that illusion being to change in a perfect way. Earth and other blind space is just the illusion being changing in a way through blind consciousness influencing it. Yes.
Christine. So, how does something change in a perfect way for those at home?
Yeah, so my body, I can either choose to match the gravity of the earth and use power from foot, charge up my center to create a straight line, and then my arms are light off that. That's more in harmony, that's perfect in harmony with gravity if I can live in that, right? But not perfect would be not aware of my body and hold my posture all weird like this, right? So my body is going to change based on my awareness of it. If I'm perfectly aware of gravity, posture, qigong, straight center, then my body will change in a way that remains more perfect. If I'm not aware of that, it'll change in a way that's less perfect. And that's why you see those old people hunched right forward. They started here, like you and me, when they were young. But as their neck came a little bit further forward, that meant gravity pulled a little bit stronger and the structure had a little bit more pressure. Until one day they're just here and they can't turn their head and they can't walk properly.
They can't look at the sky.
They can't look up, they can't do anything. My grandfather, at the end of his life, you tap him on the shoulder and he had to do a full, like his feet had to turn around to look at you. He couldn't turn his neck. So that's changing in a blind direction versus changing in a perfect direction is the way we try to... I needled Daniel's legs today. How much better did your hips feel? Right? It's a shame that we're so blind that we need to use such extreme measures to make changes. But at least we know how to make those changes, because it's worse if you can't make those changes. Anyone who's had pain and wanted something released, it's so frustrating when you have pain. And when it goes, you're like, oh, yes.
The pain's gone. I must have fixed it.
Exactly.
I'm going to lift weights now.
Yeah, I'm going to lift weights. Back to the gym. But yeah, so today's class, I was a little bit rattled by the thing that happened in
Christchurch.
It really shook me. And I think the reason for that is normally it's some other nationality in another part of the world. It's like out of sight, out of mind. I don't know the space. Christchurch, I know Christchurch. I got friends in Christchurch. And he was an Australian guy. And it's just...
I've got friends who are Australian guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And like it's just crazy that it can come that close. So I think it rattled me a bit more. And I realized, like, sitting with that feeling is blind. For me to have suffering for them, me having suffering for them doesn't do anything for them. So that's blind. But I don't also have the wisdom to help them. That's high level wisdom that I don't have. So rather than me just sitting with this suffering feeling, I bowed to Hell Bodhisattva, because Hell Bodhisattva's will is to help all the consciousness lost in blind hell karma suffering. And whether those people realized it or not, somewhere they created whatever karma put them in that space at that time. It's cold logic, but their intention was to be there in that moment, and that guy's intention was to do that. So it takes two hands to clap. The result is that horrible situation.
They said, we often say, if a baby touches fire, it still gets burnt. And there's a good chance that you don't have to be consciously knowing this lifetime that you're walking yourself in harm's way. There's already a causation over many lifetimes to that happening. So it's very easy to get to think, oh, that's not fair. Like, what have these innocent people done? And we don't actually know, but the system of karma says that, but you know, there's balance in all things eventually. So it's kind of horrific to say that's their karma, but it also matches the logic of life.
Mm. Nice. Yeah. There could be a fire there and the baby is just naive and sees fire and wants to know what it is and gets burned. It's curious and innocent, but the blind factor that it doesn't know what fire is where the burn comes from. And often we create karma without realizing we're creating it. That's when, if we know it's going to create suffering, most of the time we won't do it. Sometimes we still will. Yeah, like,
well, it's a hell karma if you know what it is, and you know.
Well, like, I mean, yeah, even, so, little, yeah, even little karma, things, like, yeah. I'm going to have a few drinks. Oh, too many drinks, wake up with a headache. You didn't mean to have the headache. You kind of knew it would come, but you did it anyway. That's a small case. But big case is more like you kind of have taken a few steps too far and you're already in a trouble that you can't undo that cause. So because we're at that stage where we're still learning to understand karma and causation and learn to observe our consciousness and observe our intention, thinking, speaking, and action, Hell Bodhisattva created a system where so we don't get smashed by our karma before we raise to a level where we can actually go back and it's called balance out your karma. So if I say in a past life, Daniel was my worker bull. I was a farmer, Daniel was a bull because he's year of the bull, so I'm going to use that as an example. And every day I kept him chained up in a paddock, made him work real hard, gave him bad food and just worked him real hard. I
can't believe you did that.
I can't believe I did that, right? But he was a good, hard-working bull and I didn't want to make him get lazy. Branded him and everything. Look at all the tats I gave him.
He stayed with the horses, so we branded him with a horse.
So in a past life I did that, and then this life... and then say I raise to a level where I actually can observe I created that bad karma and I want to undo, I want to balance that out. The only way for me to balance that out is for me to develop the ability to actually divide consciousness and go and connect to wherever Daniel's ended up in reincarnation and go there and connect to him and use convenient wisdom to teach him life is an illusion, help him awaken from the eye that he's trapped in and help him understand eternal wisdom. And when he's out of reincarnation, then that karma is balanced out. Before that, it'll still come back to hit me. So you think back over your life, just this life, even just the last couple of months, how many life have you probably accidentally killed by stepping on them because you weren't aware they were there? Or driving in your car and the bugs will hit your windshield or the grill in your car? Or the stuff you eat, you know, like we're in a space where we're constantly creating karma. And because we aren't aware of the karma, we create blind karma. And so Hell Bodhisattva can see all these humans running around, creating all this weird karma, and some of them are trying to learn. But because they've created all this blind karma, that karma is going to come and smash them before they really raise their level. So Hell Bodhisattva made a will to help balance that karma or protect you from your karma until you get to that level that you can clean it out yourself. So one of the reasons we bow to Hell Bodhisattva is to help us manage our own karma for any life we may have accidentally killed or hurt or created suffering for. The other reason we bow to Hell Bodhisattva is to connect to other life that we see in suffering. So today we were going to do a bowing for the Christchurch people, anyway, all the victims of that. And it's for that reason we don't have to not eat meat and garlic and onion.
Mm.
Yeah, so if we're bowing for our own karma, we don't eat those things. But because we're bowing for other life, we don't have to match that high discipline because it's not our own karma. We're bowing for other life. Cool?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Everyone cool with that? So you don't have to if you don't want to, but I just thought it'd be nice. Everyone cool with that?
This is the same one that we bow for, like, if someone, you know, has died, like, in suffering and to release, like, or something, has some
purpose. Yeah.
Yeah. And so...
So we're going to teach you how to bow today. Yeah. And if you, like, every time I'm at a funeral,
mm-hmm.
I just sit there and I constantly just bow to Hell Bodhisattva and try and connect. Mostly it's a family member or a mm-hmm. friend. Mm-hmm. I try and just connect that person. Because mm-hmm. they say that when you die, it can be up to 7 weeks. I think it is 7 weeks. Mm-hmm. You can, if you're really holding onto your body, you'll hang around that body holding onto it for 7 weeks. And if you, like, watch your parents cremate your body, it's like forcing you to let go of it. So connecting that consciousness to Hell Bodhisattva means that Hell Bodhisattva can connect that consciousness to a different life system, better spiritual karma. Anyway, out of that suffering karma and help it, like, move on. So one reason we bow is for, yeah. So you can, what the bowing we do today, you can use for any time someone dies. If you ever kill something by accident, you can bow for it. Sometimes we have, like, cockroaches and stuff in the house. I'll give them a quick whack and bow for them because I don't want to kill that life. I'll do my best to avoid it. If I'm walking along the street and there's a cockroach, I'll dance around it. I'll do my best not to, but it's in your house. You've got to kind of keep your house clean because they spread germs and you might get sick.
You have ants.
You have ants.
Yeah, that's a hard one.
Many little soldiers.
And something you said as well, that you, if you, we talk about Christchurch, if you feel bad, you, that's a normal feeling, but you stay with that suffering, that creates another karma for yourself, and that doesn't actually help that karma. But to bow to a consciousness, you know, amazing high level who actually has power to help that consciousness, that's the way, it's a lotus system to turn something that's negative into something that's bright and positive. So, yeah, that's why I like this system.
Yeah, it's awesome, man.
Aaron, you had a question?
Before Hel Buddhisattva was a Buddhisattva, Hel Buddhisattva was a woman. And her mum was a bit weird, a bit crazy in the head, and went around killing and torturing little other life and eating them. And
disrespecting spiritual teachers.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Fulfilling Hel karmas.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that bit.
Maybe that's the dramatic extra,
but yeah. So creating all kinds of bad karma, and the daughter knew when she died, knew her mum was going to hell. Like, just could observe her life, understood a bit of Buddhism, and was like, oh, she's definitely going to reincarnate to a hell space. For that intention is going to connect to other like-minded intention. So you go to where? So humans, we all live on a planet with humans. Dragons all live in a dragon world. Devils, demons, and all that, they connect to devil's demon space. And that's like attracts like, so they stay down there. And so she knew that. And so she bowed to Buddha for 3 days and three nights, asking to help her mum out of that hell karma. And while she was bowing, she was so exhausted after 3 days, three nights, no break, 100% concentrated, sincere heart to bow, she passed out from exhaustion. And while she was passed out, she had a dream. In the dream, she dreamt that that Buddha appeared in front of her and taught her a meditation technique. And so when she woke up, she started practicing the meditation technique. And after practicing it and practicing it and practicing it, one day she successfully connected to it and found herself in a space that was different to where she lived. She was looking around, and all around her she could see all this life and suffering. And the way they describe it, it's meant to be pretty gnarly, so we won't go into the detail, but basically watching other life get killed, reassembled, killed again, just constantly going through that suffering of dying and having their body re-put together, ripped apart again. And she looked around and saw all that suffering everywhere, and then a consciousness appeared in front of her whose name translates to Ghost King, which, he was like the manager of that space, trying to help that space, help like keep order in that space. And he appeared in front of her and bowed to her and said, "Oh, wise Buddhisattva, why have you come to this realm?" "I'm not a Buddhisattva, I'm just here to find my mum." He said, "Well, only two types of life appear in this space. All the life you see around you who are repaying their karma, they're in suffering. And consciousness that come here without suffering must be Buddhisattva. You aren't in suffering, you are now a Buddhisattva, you must be a Buddhisattva." And apparently the meditation technique that Buddha taught her was so advanced, so by connecting to that meditation technique, she had actually raised her level to be a Buddhisattva. And she was like, "Oh, okay, well, I need to find my mum." And the Ghost King said to her, "Well, actually, your bowing to Buddha was sincere. So Buddha already helped your mum out of this space. Your work here is done. You can go." And she looked around at all the life suffering all around her, and it didn't matter that she didn't know them. It didn't matter that they weren't her family or her mum. She still had that same heartfelt, "This is wrong. I don't want them to be in this suffering. There has to be another way." And she made a will on the spot. "I'm not leaving here until I help all the life out of this hell space, out of this hell karma suffering. And they have, not only am I going to help them out of this suffering, I'm going to help them become Buddha so that they never fall back into this hell karma. And if I can't do that, I don't even want to become a Buddha myself." That kind of intention is so free from what I want matters first. It's no ego. To care about all this other life more than your own spirit, your own development, that's like so no ego. That's hold nothing. All of it right there. So in that moment, her heart was so open and pure. All the Buddhas in all the 10 directions heard how sincere her heart was, saw how open her heart was to receive their wisdom. So they sent her wisdom in that moment. In that moment, her heart awakened to become a Buddha straight away. But because her will is to help every life out of hell to become Buddha first, or she doesn't want to appear as a Buddha, her respectful title is Hel Buddhisattva, the last Buddha. So until we all become a Buddha and all the life in hell become a Buddha, she won't appear as a Buddha. But truly, to make a will like that, that's already no ego. That's already Buddha level. It's a pretty cool story, huh? Yeah. Every time I hear that, it makes all my little greedy desires and wishes seem so low level. Like, so that kind of puts it in perspective, you know? Our life is very much I, my, me, my, what I want, my friends, my family, my life. It's all about me, right? And we're all about that. But that's called holding. When we live from that perspective, we see what we want and we get tunnel vision for that. And actually, the more you do that, the more you see life as separate. You see every life as different. But actually, if at essence we're all the same, we just appear differently, then why would I care about what I want more than someone else's? Why is my happiness more important than someone else's? So for that reason, we try to have no ego, no personal, hold nothing. That's the wisdom we're practicing. And yeah, so because we care, even though I don't know those people, I still, my heart went out to them. That's a horrific thing to go through. So I think it would be nice if we bow for them. Nice.